Well, greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on contracts when we come back. Hey, let me ask you this. What do you think is wrong with the Ten Commandments? Because it's pretty obvious that something is wrong. Something is very wrong with the Ten Commandments because they've been banned from our public schools. They've been banned from our public institutions. And they've been banned from our national consciousness. Now, instead of these 10 simple time-tested laws, we see the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto in their place, and they're teaching the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto in our public schools, our public institutions. We've made them a part of our national psyche. Now, this is a pretty radical change in our political and moral outlook over the past 50 years, wouldn't you think? Are you aware that your daughter couldn't receive an aspirin in your public school without your consent, but your daughter can have an abortion arranged through that same public school without even your knowledge, much less your consent? And that's why I contend that the solution to this moral perversion and national insanity is to go back to what worked. Let's go back to the Ten Commandments and the Mosaic Law. You know, our founding fathers at the Constitutional Convention in 1787 practiced and advocated the Ten Commandments, and they even put 22 principles of that law into our federal constitution. That is not separation of church and state. And you know, there's still one school left in America that teaches this entire Mosaic Law, the Ten Commandments, and all 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments, as well as the penalties and the 33 benefits for their observance. Now, every law has a penalty. You don't have to know what the penalty to the law is to suffer from its effect. So whether you call it the Mosaic Law, the Law of God, the Common Law, Natural Law, Karma, it's automatic. And then it works just like AIDS, herpes, and VD, which just happens to be the natural penalty for adultery. Now, if you'd like more information, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package? That's the place to start. It's a four-hour commentary on the law in general, and it's educational. It's informative. It's entertaining. Best of all, it's free. You can call right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and send us an email request for your free general law CD package. Again, georgegordon.org. ORG, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about contracts. Now, we've been talking about a thing here called an adhesion contract. These adhesion contracts take the form of driver's licenses, social security numbers, and I thought, gee, why don't we finish this up by talking about social security? Now, the social security number is an adhesion contract. It's a license to work for a corporation. It's a license that you need to work for a corporation. Fits right in to Revelation 13:16 that says you won't be able to buy, sell, or trade without it. I think Social Security is the mark of the beast, and I'm not alone in that. Back in the 1930s, when Franklin Roosevelt came up with this grand plan, along with Arthur Altmaier, he was the first commissioner of Social Security, no lardy. Art came up with an idea. He was a New Deal Democrat from Minnesota, came over to Washington on the Potomac there with Franklin D. Roosevelt. Altmaier testified back in 1953, and Harlow Curtis, who happened to be the committee chairman at the time over there, got some really neat admissions out of Artie. And Art admitted that Social Security was voluntary and that it was not a contract. Did you get that? Arthur Altmaier, testifying before the Senate Committee, it was actually the House Ways and Means Committee back in 1953, and he said Social Security is not a contract. Now remember, boys and girls, I've been drumming this into your heads. I said contract is an offer with an acceptance over time with consideration. I said it's a contract. Well, it's not a conventional contract. It isn't a contract from the point of view that you have prescribed benefits. Social Security was called by the Supreme Court of the United States. The Supreme Court had to weigh in on this one time back about 79 or 80, long in there. They did it in a case called Bowen versus Secretary, but in a case called Fleming versus Nestor. See if we've got a year here. Yes, 19. Shucks. And I think it was back in 1969, but I don't have a date on it here, but it's called Fleming versus Nestor. And the Supreme Court says that this program is a scheme. The Supreme Court of the United States called Social Security a scheme, And they said that the program was designed to function into the indefinite future, and its specific provisions rest on predictions as to expected economic conditions, which must inevitably prove less than wholly accurate. In layman's language, it's a pile of BS that's certainly going to turn to SH. And on judgments and preferences as to the proper allocation of the nation's resources, which evolving economic and social conditions will of necessity in some degree modify. So they went on to say, to engraft upon the social security system a concept of accrued property rights would deprive it of the flexibility and boldness in adjustment to ever-changing conditions which it demands. And so here's the key, property rights. There are no property rights in social security. And contracts are predicated upon property and property rights, and property is the holy grail of law in Anglo-Saxon administration. It comes from thou shalt not steal. It's the bedrock. It's if you're going to have property, kids, you're going to have, you're going to have hard money. You're going to have assets, gold and silver coin. If you're going to have something called property, it's going to come from contract. It's going to come from the contract called the Eighth Commandment, the Ten Commandments. When you practice the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto, you get deprived of your property under the first plank, which calls for the abolition of all right to property. That's why Franklin Roosevelt, back in 1933, first olive out of the jar on March 5th, 1933. He closed the banks and called in all the gold. He took away from us our capacity to pay our debts at law. Now, you know, the average guy today, he looks back and he says, well, I don't care whether I have a gold coin to buy this with or paper. Oh, no. Remember, your God, your Creator told you, thou shalt not steal. He enforced that by saying, you shall not have an unjust weight or balance in your bag. Your founding fathers at the Constitutional Convention in 1787 gave you Article 1, Section 10 in your federal constitution. That calls for gold and silver coin. Franklin Roosevelt said, no, we're going to take that away from you. And the people of America lined up to turn their gold into the banks. Last time I told you, you people will line up to get your chip. Now, 1933, we were in the midst of a Great Depression, and the people could see no other way than to give up their gold and to follow the New Deal. And they did. It was a choice that had to be made, and they made it. And they made that choice for you and I as well, because today, most of us have Social Security numbers. Now, I'm one of those that no longer has one. I used to have one. I did. Honest to God, I had one. I used to be normal. And then I discovered what that Social Security was. It's an adhesion contract. It's a contract, all right. But it's not an ordinary contract. It's an extraordinary contract, and it is a contract that is devoid of, and it takes away from you your property rights that you get from the Ten Commandments, the commandment that says, thou shalt not steal, which is the basis of all property rights. And that's why House Joint Resolution 192 was so important. To implement the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto and to remove the Ten Commandments, we have to do something. And government did. First of all, they created the Great Depression. That was number one. Then once there was a Great Depression, then they said, okay, well, now here's the answer. I mentioned this last time. It's called Hegelian. So if I got the second word here, Hegelian, if I can remember it now. Trying to think of economics here. Dialectics. Kind of an odd term. And what that means is that we're going to create a problem, and then we're going to offer the solution to it. And so they did that. See, you got 9/11. We got this problem, and here's our solution. Then we bought it. And now we're not happy with it. Nobody's happy with the war in Iraq. We're not happy with the war on terror. We're not happy with George Bush. But, you know, now we're stuck with it. And that's what happened with Franklin Roosevelt. You know, we wanted limited liability. We wanted fiat currency. We wanted a central bank. You know, the fifth plank to the Communist Manifesto is the central bank. Nobody wants an income tax. But you have to have an income tax with fiat currency. And so that's the second plank. So if you take a look, you know, I said last time, I said, you know, Americans practice communism like ducks practice swimming. I mean, we took to communism like a duck to water. The second plank calls for a heavy progressive income tax. Fifth plank calls for a central bank. That's our Federal Reserve and our heavy progressive income tax. That's two of them. The eighth plank calls for Social Security. Did you know that? The tenth plank calls for free education for all children in public school. Did you know that? Okay, we practice all 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto, but we do not practice the Ten Commandments. And we started on this road down, you know, as they say in law, you know, it's called the slippery slope. Now, we started on the slippery slope with the creation of the Federal Reserve back in 1913. And then the next part of the slippery slope was the Great Depression. And then the next part of the slippery slope is the solution to the Depression, which is Social Security, which then leads us to the income tax under the Victory Tax Act of 1942. And there has been a steady progression toward totalitarian government in this country since 1913. You know, the first olive out of the jar is the Federal Reserve. Second olive out of the jar is the Great Depression. Third olive is we're going to take your gold away. Fourth olive, we're going to give you Social Security. Fifth olive, we're going to implement the income tax. Sixth olive, seventh olive, you know. Pretty soon, you know, all the olives are falling out of the jar. Now, the last olive in the jar over here is this national health care insurance. It's coming in the year 2009. And the first thing you're going to do is you're going to elect a Democratic president and a Democratic Congress, just like you did in 1933. What we do is we put the Republicans in office, and then we create this problem like we did. We put the Republicans in office, and we created the Great Depression. This turned the American people against conservative politics and against their Constitution. Franklin Roosevelt comes along and says, all you have to fear is fear itself. Follow me. Let's get rid of gold, number one. And the people said, oh, yeah, that sounds like a good idea. Let's get rid of gold. So we did. Let's have Social Security. So we did. Let's have a world war. So we did. And so now we're down to the final act before the Great Tribulation. The final act. It reminds me of the last great act of defiance. The last great act of defiance. And there's a cartoon out, and there's this little mouse. He's down here, and he's giving the famous middle finger salute to an eagle. And this eagle, you know how these eagles can be painted to look real mean? This is the meanest, nastiest, ugliest, god-awful eagle you have ever envisioned in your wildest nightmare. And so here's this eagle. His talons are fully extended, and they are glistening in the sun, and they're about 4 inches away from the mouse. The eagle is closing in. You know how eagles come down to catch a fish, or they come down to catch something? The eagle has this nasty look on his face. His talons are glistening in the sun. His wings are folded in, and he's 4 inches away from the mouse, who's sitting down here giving him the finger. And the caption says, the last great act of defiance. Boys and girls, that's where America is today. We are in our last great act of defiance against our God, and it's national health care insurance. Now, it's going to be voluntary. I'm going to avoid it like AIDS, herpes, and VD. You know, I'm going to stay as far away from Hillary and the national health care plan, but I just wanted to point out, it'll be done with your consent. You're going to go in there and practice your contract, and you're going to vote. Now, remember, a contract is an offer with an acceptance over time with consideration. That's what democracy is all about. And the brightest part of this whole sordid mess is that the king that we elect, that we select, the king that we place over us is going into national captivity with us. That's the only bright spot in the whole sordid mess. The king that we set over us is going into captivity with us. Now, when we talk about Social Security, you know, the state may require private individuals to obtain a state-created franchise, such as a license to work for the state or for any of its corporate creations. That's why you have to have a Social Security number to work for General Motors. A corporation, which is a creature of the state, can be compelled to require a prospective employee to possess a Social Security number, which is evidence of a state-created franchise, prior to hiring you for that job. And that's because an individual has no common law right to work for a corporation. Corporations are a creature of the civil law. Corporations are not created under the common law. The common law does not recognize corporations created under the civil law either. And corporations are juristic state-created persons. And under corporate law, the creator of the corporation, the state, can demand anything it desires from its creation, such as regulation by statute and taxation, and it can even destroy it by use of taxation. Now, just as a state employee must obtain a Social Security number and pay an income tax on the privilege of working for the state, the individual free man who is otherwise unenfranchised must admit to enfranchisement to work for the state or for one of its corporate creations. And those applying for and receiving a Social Security number have applied for and received a privilege from government for which an excise tax can be levied, which is proof of participation. And that proof of participation is the Social Security account number, which is your taxpayer identification number. It's your voluntary consent to pay the income tax. You want to participate, you got to pay. Therefore, the Social Security number is a quasi-licensed contract to work for all those who want to work for the state or one of its corporations, and it has the effect of extending the state franchise to the employee. It's satanic, and it's genius. Nobody ever said Satan was a dummy. Participation in the Social Security welfare system, as well as the privilege to receive entitlements such as unemployment insurance and welfare, food stamps, aid to families with dependent children, and so on, are congressionally granted privileges or benefits, and they accrue to participants. And any privilege granted by government is a proper subject of taxation. Want to know what a proper subject of taxation is? Anything that you are unjustly enriched from. Now, back in the 30s, many right-wing preachers said, Social Security is the mark of the beast. Avoid it. But you know, it's hard to avoid something when there is a critical mass like 9/11. Hard to avoid the war on terror. Hard to avoid the Patriot Act and Homeland Security and the measures taken by government when you have this problem called terrorism. When you had the Great Depression, it was awful hard to resist Social Security, the gold clause under, or the gold confiscation under House Joint Resolution 192. But you know, that's what your God requires. And let me tell you, 46 million Americans, they told me the other day, I got it right from Katie. Katie Couric told me, 46 million Americans don't have affordable health insurance. I'm one of those. I don't have affordable health insurance. Hell, even if it was affordable, I wouldn't take it. I avoid health insurance like I avoid Flo's whorehouse. But I'm afraid Hillary is going to enforce, she's going to present national health care insurance, just like Franklin Roosevelt forced Social Security on us. She's going to force national health care. Now, I'm going to avoid national health care. You can do that. It's not easy. It's not easy. But it can be done. For instance, I avoid Federal Reserve notes. It's not easy, but it's not impossible. And then I use gold and silver coin, which is what Article 1, Section 10 of our Constitution mandates and what God Almighty mandates and what the Ten Commandments mandate. It's not easy to deal in gold and silver coin, but it's not impossible. It can be done. It just requires a little imagination, a little work, and a little self-discipline and sacrifice. And you can obey God and keep the Ten Commandments. You don't have to practice the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto. But I got to tell you, communism is easy to practice. It's right out there in front of you. Shucks, kids, sin is easy to practice. Crime is easy to practice. Drugs are easy to practice. Drugs are everywhere. You don't have to get drugs down on the street corner. Hell, your local doctor will prescribe drugs for you. America is a nation of drug addicts. This is a drug induced society or culture. 80% of Americans are on one prescription drug. 80% of us, boys and girls in this country, 80%. That's teenagers. Hell, our children are on prescription drugs. Our children are drug addicts. We prescribe Ritalin in our public schools. Hell, we turn our children. We are creating a 100% drug culture in America. Now, of course, we're always spouting off about, oh, we're opposed to drugs, and we got a war on drugs. Oh, come on. Give me a break. Why the people that were opposed to drugs were the Taliban in Afghanistan. They abolished heroin and heroin growing in Afghanistan. We couldn't have that. That's why we went to war in Afghanistan. Now, I'm happy to report to you that in Afghanistan, the largest, the greatest, the biggest heroin crop in the history of Afghanistan is being harvested right now under American military occupation. Got that? Don't sit there and tell me that we're opposed to drugs. Grow up. Wake up. Pay attention. That's where reality is located. Now, it gets a little worse than that. If you're 65, which I am, if you get to be 65 and you're older than 65, on average, you're on 6 prescription medications. So here's us old guys out here saying, oh, you young kids out there, just say no to drugs. So here we are, grandmas and grandpas on 6 drugs on average. Of course, we don't take those illegal drugs. We're not on recreational drugs. All of our drugs are necessary, and they're prescribed by our doctors. And Hillary's going to make it real easy for us. Real easy. She's going to give us national health care insurance. And George Bush made it real easy for us to be drug addicts. He gave us the national free drug system. What do they call it? National something, rather. George Bush, the conservative. George Bush, the drug pusher. Now, listen, we're all doing this by consent. I mean, you know, we're not out here. You know, government didn't come up to you with a .45 and stick it at your head and said, here, we're going to roll up your sleeve. We're going to shoot you up with a shot of heroin here. No, they don't do that. But you go down to your doctor and you consent and you sign on the dotted line and you got a social security number and you did it with your consent. And those are called adhesion contracts, and it's done because that's what we want. And that's why social security is the third rail to politics. We want social security, boys and girls, and I'm not here to abolish social security. Shucks, I don't want to get in the way of your happiness and success. I just wanted to explain to you, well, here's the ramifications of it. You know, there's side effects that come from it. You get on drugs and you get side effects. The ultimate end of it is death. And when we're talking about the nation, the ultimate end of it is the death of the nation. The United States of America is going into national captivity, and you Canadians, Australians, and New Zealanders are coming right after us. Right after us. And the reason for that is that we've been giving the finger to our God, the last great act of defiance. And national captivity is the penalty for that. And then you'll read about that in the penal clause in Leviticus chapter 26, and it's about verse 30 or 35 along in there. Hang on, I'll look it up for you so that you can look it up for yourself. Well, if you want some bad news, you subscribe to the International Forecaster and the Privateer. International Forecaster and Privateer. If you want a steady diet of bad news. And then if you want to really top it off with a little frosting, you listen to the Law or an editorial review. And verse 33 says, I'm going to scatter you among the heathen, and I'm going to draw a sword after you. That's war. I'm going to draw a sword out after you, and your land shall be desolate, and your cities made waste, and the land shall enjoy your Sabbaths as long as it lies desolate, and you be in your enemy's land. That's national captivity and deportation. When you're in your enemy's land, you know those guys down in Guantanamo? Guantanamo? All you Muslims out there, listen up now. You're at war, and your God Allah did not save those prisoners from Guantanamo. They have been uprooted and deported from their country, Afghanistan or wherever. And they have been taken to their enemy's land in Guantanamo over with the great Satan, America. And they are being held there. All right. Now for you Americans, Canadians, and Australians, and Britons, and so on, this is coming upon us, called the Great Tribulation. And he says, then shall the land enjoy your Sabbath as long as it lies desolate, and you be in your enemy's land. Even then shall the land rest and enjoy your Sabbath. As long as it lies desolate, it shall rest, because it did not rest in your Sabbath when you dwelt upon it. Boys and girls, we don't practice the Sabbath over here. Now, we did until 1950 or so. We used to have blue laws here in the United States. Blue laws, where we actually practice the Sabbath. We don't any longer. Now, we've been giving the finger to our Creator for 50 years or more. Actually, longer than that, but, you know, for the last 50, I mean, we've been getting hot and heavy and real serious by adopting the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto and Social Security, which is the mark of the beast. Now, you know, old Dad, he gets bummed out, and then he goes ballistic. It's going to get worse than that. He's going postal on us. Postal. Postal. Don't forget that cute term, you know. For you people that don't know what that is, that's when people go nuts and they pick up a gun and go kill about 30 people. That's going postal. Well, God does that every once in a while. It doesn't happen very often, but, you know, he goes ballistic on us and bounces off the ceiling and flies off the handle. He starts killing a lot of people. You know, he did that out at the Red Sea. He got the Egyptian army down there, you know, down there in the Red Sea, and then he couldn't hold the water up anymore. He could hold it up for so long, and then he got weak arms, couldn't hold the water up, and then all the Egyptians drowned. Remember that story? He's done that a couple of times. And he's punished us a time or two, you know, in our history. You know, you go back in history, and we've gone into national captivity before. And we're about to go into national captivity again. So I thought I'd share that with you. And the reason for it is these contracts. I think it's about time for us to put a little spine back there where our jelly backbone is, and get a little spine, get a little rigidity back there, and say no to Social Security. And say no to the New World Order with some oomph behind it. You know, like rescind Social Security, stop paying the income tax, don't get the mark of the beast, don't sign up for national health care insurance, don't use Federal Reserve notes, close your bank account, use gold and silver. I mean, you know, crazy, off-the-wall, right-wing, lunatic, fringe kinds of things that you get from the Ten Commandments instead of the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto. Wild things. All right, now let me give you a reminder here. Got to take a little break here and remind you that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard 7 days a week daily worldwide over the Internet. For more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Remember, The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to the homeschooling page on our website. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives that can be accessed through the website as well. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do that 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, please call the Law School at 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or of this local radio station. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about contracts. Now, when we take a look at the Social Security contract, which is a very special hybridized contract, which we have concluded is not a contract because it has no property rights. The Supreme Court has said it's a social welfare scheme. Well, it's a social welfare scheme contract that you volunteered for with no property rights. It's preposterous. I mean, it's got to be the most ridiculous, insane program that anybody ever conceived, developed, advanced, propagated, sold, or bought, participates in, uses, or votes on. But we've got it, and we love it, and we're not going to give it up. So you might as well understand how it works, why it works that way, and what the ultimate end game or the ultimate ramifications are going to be. Well, number one, it's the mark of the beast, and you pay into it $5 and receive $1 back. It's a chain letter Ponzi scheme that is unsustainable. And it is going to collapse, and you're not going to get even your $1 back. Well, many of you aren't. Now, for people in my generation, you'll probably get, you know, most of what you paid in, if not all of it. In former generations, they got back way more than they paid in. I'm at the point where if I had to get back what I paid in, I couldn't do that. So I opted out of it many years ago, and so I'm not entitled to Social Security, don't draw it, and I don't participate in the program. But those that are participating in the program, you paid in $153,000, and you're going to get back $96,000. So you're not going to get back what you paid in, but you're going to get something. But we're heading into a period where whatever you paid in, you're not going to get back anything, period. All right, so that's where we're headed. And now our Medicare program is also on the rocks, and this is why we have to have this national health care. Because when this economy collapses, when this thing turns turtle, and it'll be done on the Republican watch, so that you people will be so mad that you're going to vote in the straight Democratic ticket, and you're going to put in a Democratic president and a Democratic Congress in 2008, just like you did in 1932, then they will have a free hand to do whatever the hell they want to do. And that's what they're going to do. All right, so get ready for it. And that's what's coming. Now, there's a little more to the story here. The benefits of Social Security are, in effect, subsidies of certain privileges such as minimum wage, unemployment, and compensation insurance. And there's 108 benefits under the Social Security program. The costs of these benefits can be levied upon such privileges as an indirect or excise tax. And that's what the income tax is. It's an excise tax. It's a privilege tax. So the Social Security tax, the Social Security tax is a tax on employers, and the income tax is a tax on the employee. And the two go together. The two go together. And you can't have one without the other. And Social Security is your taxpayer identification number, and you can't get a job without a Social Security number, and you can't get the benefits without a Social Security number. All right, I don't want to pay the tax, and I don't want the benefits. I don't have a Social Security number, and I don't participate in income. So I have to avoid unjust weights and balances, because that's what the tax is on. The unjust weights and balances are Federal Reserve notes, checks, stocks, bonds, and commercial paper. If you want to participate in the stock market, the bond market, Federal Reserve notes, checking accounts, Social Security, welfare, food stamps, you know, the safety net, the safety blanket, as George Bush calls it, you know, your safety net, you got to pay for that. Now, if you participate in it and you don't pay, then it's called unjust enrichment. And then you can't have unjust enrichment in law, not in Anglo-Saxon administration. We don't allow it. Now, you don't have to take the unjust enrichment, but if you do, you have to pay for it. So all you tax protesters out there, here's what the problem is. You have Social Security numbers and bank accounts. This is where Irwin Schiff is. Nice guy. God, I love Irwin. He's a great guy. But Irwin has a Social Security number, and Irwin wants to participate in checking accounts and bank accounts. He wants the benefits. He wants to be unjustly enriched, but he doesn't want to pay the tax to support the enrichment. Well, you can't have that. Now, I don't know if it's right or wrong or good or bad or fair or unfair. I don't make these laws. I'm just a reporter. I'm just here to report. This is the way the game's played. Here's how it works. And if you want to participate in it, fine. You know, get after it. But I think you'd be better served if you didn't. Now, there was a time in America when we didn't have Social Security. And when you got to be old, if you didn't prepare for your old age, of and by yourself and on your own, well, you could end up in what they used to call, my granny used to call, the poorhouse. Whatever this thing called the poorhouse was, I always envisioned it as being a house down the street from our house in Willits, California, and it was the house for the poor, and there's all these poor people in this house. I never did see the house. I don't know where it's located, but wherever this poorhouse is, you know, when you're a little kid, you know, and somebody says Santa Claus comes down the chimney, you know, you try to visualize how this great big fat guy that you were sitting on his lap down here at Brizard's store is going to get down the 6-inch pipe, and when he does, he's going to get right into your oil heater. Because see, we had a chimney, but it wasn't the conventional chimney like you people in Boston have. We burned oil, you know, in our house, and we had oil heat, and we had this oil heater, and Santa Claus is going to have to come down the chimney. And I was trying to visualize how you can get Santa Claus down the 6-inch pipe. Even when I was 4 years old, I was suspicious that there was skullduggery going on. It was over that Santa Claus thing. Well, now, you know, since the corporation that you're working for, or the state, which is a corporation, is nothing more than an extension of the state, its employees can be forced to voluntarily obtain a Social Security number as a federal license to work for a corporation and franchise, so says U.S. versus Flora, and voluntarily accept and use Federal Reserve notes in payment of the consideration or just compensation of the debt arising among them between the employee, the corporation, and the federal government. And you can be forced or compelled to pay the federal tax debt arising from the franchise and Federal Reserve notes, provide information, file a return, and file an IRS W-4 form upon employment, which is a contract, a franchise, and an expectation and promise of payment of the tax due at the year's end. So you got this W-4 form, W-2 form. Then you got Social Security. Hey, is this a web? Is this a spider's web that we have spun around ourselves? Hey, it makes all the sense in the world. I don't deny that. And it's a part and parcel with the administration. And you got to do it. And if you don't, you'll go to jail like Irwin Schiff. Now, there's an alternative, and that's why the law school and editorial review comes on the air and operates a law school and says, hey, kids, there's an alternative to all this. It's called the Ten Commandments. It's called just weights and balances. Our founding fathers put 22 principles of the Ten Commandments into our federal constitution. One of those is Article 1, Section 10, just weights and balances. Just weights and balances. And the purpose behind hard money, gold and silver, that Franklin Roosevelt and Lyndon Johnson took away from us, remember? So that we can have property and property rights. So that we can provide for ourselves in our old age. So that we can own property. So that we can practice the Ten Commandments instead of the Ten Planks. I mean, that's the alternative that we have available to us. Now, when you go to church, your preacher says the Ten Commandments are okay, but they're no longer binding. And they were nailed to the cross with Jesus, and just have faith and believe and put your money in the offering plate and everything's going to go real good for you, as I say down here in the South, for you, down in the holler. And I'm not so sure that that's the case. I've got my suspicions, I've got my doubts, and so I'm just kind of sharing them with you. Now, if you're going to give up Social Security, your checking account, your banking account, you know, you've got a big road to hoe here, boys and girls. This ain't easy. It ain't impossible, but it isn't easy. And most people can't do this. The Messiah made an observation. He said, you know, straight is the way, and narrow is the gate that leads to life, and broad is the way, and easy, you know, to go to hell in the handbasket, as they say. So the Ten Commandments are tough. It's hard. It's a difficult way of life that has benefits, and it has rewards. And somebody ought to sit down with you, you know, kind of like your advisor, you know, on your retirement. You know, he sits down with you and he says, okay, now here's what we have to do in order for you to have enough money at the end of your working career here to retire. We've got to invest this money in certain things in certain ways over here so that we can avoid the pitfalls and the losses that go along with investing over here. And so you have this investment advisor and he's trying to advise you on how to invest your money. Well, you got the same thing going on here with the Ten Commandments. You know, there are side effects that come from practicing communism. You know, like wars in Afghanistan and Iraq and national bankruptcy and Social Security is unsustainable and Medicare is unsustainable. And so we have this Hegelian dialectics coming upon us, and Hillary is going to come up with the solution. George Bush is going to create the insoluble problem. And then Hillary's going to come along and say, all we have to fear is fear itself. What we need is national health care insurance, and we have to have the new Amero, and we've got to have a chip in our right hand. And you people will line up just like you did in 1933 to turn your money into Bank of America. And that's what my granddad did. He got in line in Eureka, California, and turned his gold in at the Bank of America. It used to be called the Bank of Italy in those days. But that was so that we could get out of the Depression. God bless Franklin Roosevelt, saved us from the Depression. And then Hillary's going to save us. Mark your words. Hillary's going to save you. And then old dad's going to go ballistic. And boy, that's not going to be very fun. But that story is in Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy chapter 28. Now, the reason that Social Security account numbers operate as a franchise tax is that the payments are matched by the employer, which is a state-created corporation, resulting in reduced net tax revenue by way of deductions. And the payments from the employee and the corporation go into the general fund and not into a special protective fiduciary fund. See, they call it the Social Security Trust Fund. You ever heard that term, Social Security Trust Fund? If, in fact, there was a Social Security Trust Fund, you know, we'd be in Fat City. But there isn't. Those monies are paid over to the general fund. And old Harlow Curtis, you know, he was the chairman of the House Ways and Means Subcommittee in 1953, and he got Arthur Altmaier in there and said, is there any property right in Social Security? No, sir. If you had a trust fund, you'd have a property right. And you don't have a trust fund, and you don't have a property right, and the Supreme Court's already ruled on that. And I think that was Fleming versus Nestor in 1969, if my memory serves me correctly. And if you want to see that Fleming case, it's called Fleming v. Nestor. Cited at 363 U.S. 603. That's 363 U.S. 603. All right. Fleming versus Nestor in the Supreme Court called that a scheme. Social Security is a scheme. Supreme Court, you know, they got some nice guys on there that kind of know where the bodies are buried. Every once in a while, I was get a kick out of old William O. Douglas. You know, he was kind of a maverick on the court. And he issued a lot of dissenting opinions, and he'd come up with a neat line. It was, we have reached the right conclusion for all of the wrong reasons. And then he would write his opinion, and he'd correct everybody and tell them, you know, here's where the bodies are buried. Well, the Supreme Court does that from time to time, and Fleming versus Nestor is one of those kind of cases where this guy comes in here, and he's got a bitch over Social Security. And so the Supreme Court comes in and says, well, Social Security is a scheme, and it's constitutional, and here's why. It's voluntary. It's not mandatory. If Social Security were mandatory, it would be unconstitutional. But because it's voluntary, that's why it's constitutional. And the Supreme Court's ruled on that a couple of times, too. And so, you know, a lot of tax protesters say, well, Social Security is unconstitutional. No, it isn't. It's not unconstitutional. Then they say, well, the income tax is unconstitutional. No, it isn't. The income tax is constitutional. And it's been ruled constitutional 68 times. Oh, excuse me, wrong number. 38 times. 38 times. Between 1916 with Bruce Haber and 1964. 38 times. Now, you can sit there and you can bellyache until the hell freezes over that it's unconstitutional, and you can go into court and argue that if you want to, but you'll go to jail if you do. And so, you know, don't let me tell you how to live your life. Now, I don't pay income tax, but I'm not a tax protester, and I'm not running around here telling you that the income tax is unconstitutional and that you shouldn't pay it. If you've got a Social Security number, you get out there and you file your tax return, and you do that every year. If you're going to use bank accounts, if you're going to buy stocks and bonds and deal in income, you need to pay the income tax. You know, I've been telling people, you know, for many, many years, I think you should stop having income. It's a criminal activity. Did you know that? The income tax is a criminal activity. Social Security is a criminal activity. Sabbath breaking is a criminal activity. I think we should stop doing those things. You know, that's why I advocate the Ten Commandments. And a lot of times people write me letters, you know, sometimes it's kind of nasty letters, and they say, what kind of a nut are you? Over here on one side of your mouth, you're talking religion, and on the other side of your mouth, you're talking law, and they're incompatible. No, you got that backwards. You can't teach law without the Ten Commandments. I know they do it at Harvard and Yale and Brigham Young. I don't deny that. But in Anglo-Saxon administration, children, you can't have law without the Ten Commandments, because the two go together like a hand and a glove and a horse and a carriage. The basis of property rights, you know, the basis of law is property rights, and the basis of property rights is thou shalt not steal. And furthermore, we used to advocate and practice the Ten Commandments in this country. Although, you know, people today, they say, well, we got to have separation of church and state. I think we got to have separation of the state from the church, but I don't think we need a separation of the church from the state. I think we need to get the state out of construing the Ten Commandments for us, but I think we need to enforce the Ten Commandments upon George Bush. I don't think George Bush should be compelling the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto upon us, but I think we should be compelling the Ten Commandments upon government bureaucrats. And our founding fathers thought the same thing, and they did that, and it worked pretty well until about 1950, and then we got this separation of church and state program gone. And so there's a consequence that comes from that now, and that's the purpose for our program here, this broadcast contract, is to tell you that, hey, listen, now you can separate if you want to. You can practice these contracts, but you're going to have to pay a penalty to do that, and the income tax is the penalty that you pay for not tithing, and Social Security is the penalty that you pay for practicing insurance. And Homeland Security and the Patriot Act is the penalty that you pay for limited liability. Man, that's the way it is. Now, you know, if you want to do that, okay, but, you know, then you've got the side effect. Hey, you want to practice usury and interest? You want to buy your house on time with a mortgage? Okay. Well, then you buy one house for yourself and you buy two for the banker. That's the penalty that you pay for practicing usury and interest. Those of us that don't practice usury and interest buy three houses, just like you people that do practice usury and interest, but the three houses that we buy are our houses. I've got three houses. I bought them all for myself. I didn't buy one for me and two for the bank. That's because I didn't pay any usury, didn't pay any interest. I am not opposed to banking. I'm not opposed to unjust weights and balances. I'm not opposed to Federal Reserve notes. I'm not opposed to the income tax or the Federal Reserve. But I'm here as a reporter to tell you that when you participate in these programs, there's outcomes that come from them. I like to use the analogy, you're driving down the highway, and you come to a turn in the road. And along just before you get to the turn, they'll put a sign out there that says slow to 35. And we all know that that's a lie. Anybody worth his salt knows that you can go around that turn at 45, and if you're driving a Porsche, probably 55 or 60 or 65, and if you're driving a Corvette, maybe 70 or 75. But boys and girls, I don't care what the hell you're driving. Driving around that turn in the highway, there is a limit somewhere. I used to have a 47 Plymouth, and there was a limit on that 47 Plymouth, which was much lower than on a Porsche or a Corvette. Model T's is what they put those signs up for. Model T's were kind of high cars with a high center of gravity. And then a Porsche, you know, and Corvette, they got a low center of gravity, and so they hold the road better. So when the sign says 35, if you're driving a Diamond T or a Kenworth, you know, well, maybe 35 is about the speed you ought to take that turn at. If you're driving a Corvette, you know, if you want to go 45, get after it. 35 is a safe speed. 45 is a little risky. 55 is riskier yet. But, you know, at 95, 100, 110, 20, or 30, hell, even at Indianapolis 500, at 200 miles an hour with a low center of gravity, those cars every once in a while flip over and have accidents, don't they? All right. Moral to the story, there are limits. Always remember that there are limits. Now, you may want to take a little chance here and raise the stakes or raise the limits, but be aware that if you do, there may be a penalty for you to pay. Now, it's hardly lack of due process for government to regulate that which it subsidizes. So we learn in Wickard versus Filburn, that's cited at 317 U.S. 111, for all you legal beagles out there, Wickard v. Filburn. Remember, the Supreme Court says it's hardly lack of due process for government to regulate that which it subsidizes. Boys and girls, every contract that you have with government is a subsidy. Marriage license, birth registration, driver's license, Social Security, income tax. Anytime that you go to government to receive a benefit, there's going to be regulations and controls that go along with it. And that's the name of the game. That's the purpose of government. Now, if you want to be free, you want to slip the handcuffs, well, then you're going to have to be responsible. And that is the tricky part. Responsibility. He who is governed best is governed least. If you want limited government, it's available. But you're going to have to do more and more for yourself. And national health care insurance is not one of those avenues. You're going to have to stay off the welfare rolls. And you also have to stay out of the banks and all the benefits that go with stocks and bonds and negotiable instruments and unjust weights and balances and practice the Ten Commandments. And that's what we teach here at the law school. First thing we start talking about when you walk in the door is the Ten Commandments, because you can't have law, limited government, and maximum liberty without practicing the Ten Commandments. So if you want to be free practicing the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto, good luck. I wish you the best. I don't know of anybody that's ever been able to do that. Communism is a system where you stand in line, share the shortage, sit down, shut up, fold your hands, and do what you're told. It's the way they work it in China. It's the way it worked in Russia. And I don't think that communism here in the United States, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, or Western Europe is going to work any better than it worked in those countries that have already tried it and it failed. You know, communist countries like China, which are growing at 9% a year, aren't practicing communism. They're practicing thou shalt not steal and free enterprise principles of economics. And we in the West, whose economies are growing at 1%, 0.3%, or are going into recession or are already in recession, are practicing from each according to his ability and to each according to its need. And it didn't work in Russia and China, and I don't think it's going to work any better here. But give it a shot, why don't you? See if you can make it work here where they couldn't make it work. All right, we're out of time again, so I'm going to leave it right there. Talking about contracts, and remind you that you have been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the internet daily. If you'd like more information about the law school and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc. For more information, just go to the homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the internet by title of the day. Time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.